Had I been departing from the Gerentate for Radchai space, I would have been warned repeatedly that I traveled at my own risk and would receive no assistance if I found myself in difficulties. But the Radchai officials who dealt with foreign travelers knew this already and would be prepared to take my identification, more or less, at face value. Anandamanai's 13 palaces were the capitals of their provinces. Metropolis-sized stations, each one, half ordinary large Radchai station with accompanying station AI, and half palace proper. Each palace proper was the residence of Anandamanai and the seat of provincial administration. Alma Palace wouldn't be any sort of quiet backwater. A dozen gates led to its system, and hundreds of ships came and went each day. Savardin would be one of thousands of citizens seeking audience or making an appeal in some legal case. A noticeable one, certainly. None of those other citizens were returned from 1,000 years in suspension. I spent the months of travel considering just what I wanted to do about that, how to use it, how to counter its disadvantages or turn them to my favor, and considering just what it was I hoped to accomplish. It's hard for me to know how much of myself I remember, how much I might have known that I had hidden from myself all my life. Take, for instance, that last order, the instruction I, Justice of Torin, had given to me, 1-19. Get to Iray Palace, find Anandamanai, and tell her what's happened. What did I mean by that? Over and above the obvious, the bare fact I'd wanted to get the message to the Lord of the Rach. Why had it been so important? Because it had been. It hadn't been an afterthought, it had been an urgent necessity. At the time it had seemed clear. Of course I needed to get the message out. Of course I needed to warn the right Anander. I would follow my orders. But in the time I'd spent recovering from my own death, the time working my way toward Rach space, I had decided I would do something else as well. I would defy the Lord of the Rach, and perhaps my defiance would amount to nothing, a feeble gesture she would barely notice. The truth was, Stregan was right. My desire to kill Anandamanai was unreasonable. Any actual attempt to do such a thing wasn't sane. Even given a gun that I could carry into the very presence of the Lord of the Rach herself without her knowing until I chose to reveal it. Even given that, all I could hope to accomplish was a pitiful cry of defiance, gone as soon as made, easily disregarded. Nothing that could possibly make any difference. But all that secret maneuvering against herself, designed certainly to avoid open conflict, to avoid damaging the Rach too badly, to avoid, perhaps, too badly fracturing Anandamanai's conviction that she was unitary, one person. Once the dilemma had been clearly stated, could she pretend things were otherwise? And if there were now 2 Anandamanais, might there not also be more? A part, perhaps, that didn't know about the feuding sides of herself? Or told herself she didn't? What would happen if I said straight out the thing the Lord of the Rach had been concealing from herself? Something dire, surely, or she wouldn't have gone to such lengths to hide herself from herself. Once the thing was open and acknowledged, how could she help tearing herself apart? But how could I say anything straight out to Anandamanai? Granted, I could reach Alma Palace. Granted, I could leave the ship, step onto the station. If I could do that much, then I could stand in the middle of the main concourse and shout my story aloud for everyone to hear. I might begin to do that, but I would never finish. Security would come for me, maybe even soldiers, and that day's news would say, a traveler had lost her mind on the concourse, but security had dealt with the situation. citizens would shake their heads and mutter about uncivilized foreigners, and then forget all about me. And whichever part of the Lord of the Roch noticed me first could no doubt easily dismiss me as damaged and insane. Or at least, convince the various other parts of herself that I was. No, I needed the full attention of Anander Meonai when I said what I had to say. How to get it was a problem I had worried at for nearly 20 years. I knew that it would be harder to ignore someone whose erasure would be noticed. I could visit the station and try to be seen, to become familiar, so that any part of Anander couldn't just dispose of me without comment. But I didn't think that would be enough to force the Lord of the Roch, all of the Lord of the Roch, to listen to me. But Savarden, Captain Savarden Vendai, lost 1,000 years, found by chance, lost again. Appearing now at Amah Palace. Any Rajchai would be curious about that, with a curiosity that carried a religious charge. And Anander Meonai was Rajchai, perhaps the most Rajchai of Rajchai. She couldn't help but notice that I had returned in company with Savarden. Like any other citizen, she would wonder, even if only at the back of her mind, what, if anything, that might mean. And she, being who she was, the back of her mind was a substantial thing. Savarden would ask for an audience, would be eventually granted one. And that audience would have all of Anander's attention. No part of her would ignore such an event. And surely Savarden would have the attention of the Lord of the Roch from the moment we stepped off the ship. So, arriving in Savarden's company, would I. Tremendously risky. I might not have concealed my nature well enough, might be recognized for what I was. But I was determined to try. I sat on the bunk waiting for permission to leave the ship at Amah Palace, my pack at my feet, Savarden leaning negligently against the wall across from me, bored. "Something's bothering you," Savarden observed, casually. I didn't answer, and she said, "You always hum that tune when you're preoccupied." My heart is a fish, hiding in the water grass. I had been thinking of all the ways things could go wrong, starting now, starting the moment I stepped off the ship and confronted the dock inspectors, or station security, or worse, thinking of how everything I had done would be for nothing if I was arrested before I could even leave the docks. I had been thinking about Lieutenant Ahn. "I'm so transparent." I made myself smile, as though I were mildly amused. "Not transparent, not exactly, just..." She hesitated, frowned slightly, as though she'd suddenly regretted speaking. "You have a few habits, I've noticed, that's all." She sighed. "Are the dock inspectors having tea, or just waiting till we've aged sufficiently?" We couldn't leave the ship without the permission of the inspector's office. The inspector would have received our credentials when the ship requested permission to dock, and had plenty of time to look over them and decide what to do when we arrived. Still leaning against the bulkhead, Savarden closed her eyes and began to hum. Wobbling, pitch sinking or rising by turns as she missang intervals, but still recognizable. "My heart is a fish. Otter's tits," she swore after a verse and a half, eyes still closed. "Now you've got me doing it." The door chime sounded. "Enter," I said. Savarden opened her eyes, sat straight, suddenly tense. The boredom had been a pose, I suspected. The door slid open to reveal a person in the dark blue jacket, gloves, and trousers of a dock inspector. She was slight and young, maybe 23 or 24. She looked familiar, though I couldn't think who it was she reminded me of. The sparser-than-usual scatter of jewelry and memorial pins might tell me, if I stared closely enough to read names, which would be rude. Across from me, Savardin tucked her bare hands behind her back.
"Honored Breck," the inspector adjunct said, with a slight bow.
She seemed unfazed by my own bare hands. Used to dealing with foreigners, I supposed.
"Citizen Savardin, would you please accompany me to the inspector supervisor's office?"
And there should have been no need for us to visit the inspector supervisor herself. This adjunct could pass us on to the station on her own authority, or order our arrest. We followed her past the lock into the loading bay, past another lock into a corridor busy with people. Dock inspectors in dark blue, station security in light brown, here and there the darker brown of soldiers, and spots of brighter color, a scatter of non-uniformed citizens. This corridor opened into a wide room, a dozen guards along the walls to watch over travelers and traders, on one end the entrance to the station proper, and opposite, the doorway into the inspector's office. The adjunct escorted us through the outermost office, where 9 blue-uniformed minor adjuncts dealt with complaining ship captains, and beyond them were offices for likely a dozen major adjuncts and their crews. Past those and into an inner office with 4 chairs and a small table and a door at the back, closed.
"I'm sorry, honored and citizen," said the adjunct who had led us here, fingers twitching as she communicated with someone, likely the station AI or the inspector supervisor herself. "The inspector supervisor was available, but something's come up. I'm sure it won't be more than a few minutes. Please have a seat. Will you have tea?"
A reasonably long wait, then, and the courtesy of tea implied this wasn't an arrest. That no one had discovered my credentials were forged. Everyone here, including station, would assume I was what I said I was, a foreign traveler. And possibly I would have a chance to discover just who this young inspector adjunct reminded me of. Now she'd spoken at a bit more length, I noticed a slight accent. Where was she from? "Yes, thank you," I said. Savardin didn't respond to the offer of tea right away. Her arms were folded, her bare hands tucked under her elbows. She likely wanted the tea, but was embarrassed about her ungloved hands, couldn't hide them holding a bowl. Or so I thought until she said,
"I can't understand a word she's saying."
Savardin's accent and way of speaking would be familiar to most educated Rodchai, from old entertainments and the way Anander Mianai's speech was widely emulated by prestigious, or hopefully prestigious, families. I hadn't thought changes in pronunciation and vocabulary had been so extreme. But I'd lived through them, and Savardin's ear for language had never been the sharpest. "She's offering tea."
"Oh."
Savardin looked briefly at her crossed arms.
"No."
I took the tea the adjunct poured from a flask on the table, thanked her, and took a seat. The office had been painted a pale green, the floor tiled with something that had probably been intended to look like wood, and might have succeeded if the designer had ever seen anything but imitations of imitations. A niche in the wall behind the young adjunct held an icon of Amat and a small bowl of bright orange, ruffle-petaled flowers, and beside that, a tiny brass copy of the cliffside in the Temple of Ikt. You could buy them, I knew, from vendors in the plaza in front of the 4 temple water during pilgrimage season. I looked at the adjunct again. Who was she? Someone I knew? A relative of someone I'd met?
"You're humming again," Savardin said in an undertone.
"Excuse me." I took a sip of tea. "It's a habit I have. I apologize."
"No need,"
said the adjunct, and took her own seat by the table. This was, fairly clearly, her own office, and so she was direct assistant to the inspector supervisor, an unusual place for someone so young.